Welcome to the Chrisman Commentary Daily Mortgage News Podcast. I'm your host, Robbie Chrisman. Topics on today's episode include the lock-in effect, my interview with Miranda Marquette on a new study that shows that as millennials age, they're moving less than ever, and the latest jobs data on which to ruminate. Thanks to today's podcast sponsor, Loan Vision. Loan Vision is the mortgage banking industry's premier mortgage accounting solution with over 240 independent mortgage banks and banks. Customers on Loan Vision see a 10% reduction in fallout, 30% reduction in time to close the books, and a 20% reduction in accounting headcount, allowing them to operate their business more efficiently and profitably. Take your accounting department from cost center to revenue generator now with Loan Vision. To learn more, visit loanvision.com today. Nationwide, the homeownership rate is about 66%, and a huge percentage of those homeowners have low fixed rates. People can be locked in or constrained in their ability to make appropriate financial changes, such as being unable to move homes or sell assets due to tax burdens. In the U.S., nearly all 50 million active mortgages have fixed rates, and most have interest rates far below prevailing market rates, creating a disincentive to sell. These frictions, whether institutional, legislative, personal, or market-driven, are a real problem. FHFA, Fannie and Freddie's conservator, has a research piece on this since residential real estate exemplifies this challenge with its physical immobility, high transaction costs, and concentrated wealth. Speaking of which, for today's interview, I want to welcome to the show Miranda Marquette to talk about a new study that shows that as millennials age, they're moving less than ever. She's a financial wellness expert with an MBA and began writing about finances nearly 20 years ago.
HireHelper recently analyzed a bunch of Census Bureau data, and it was focused on millennial moving patterns. I'm going to kind of open the floor to you. What did you find from the data study, and what struck you as very interesting?
Yeah, so one of the things I thought was interesting, just from a different standpoint, especially that whole in your mom's basement, and as a society, I'm a younger Gen X slash elder millennial. Like I'm right on that cusp, right? And what kind of struck me is that as society at large, the way we talk about millennials is as if they're still like in their 20s and trying to figure stuff out. And the reality of the situation is, you know, they're approaching 40 or already in their 40s, and half of millennials already own their homes. So it's just kind of interesting. Over half of millennials now own their homes. Millennials have been settling down. They have been trying to buy. The current market makes it harder for more millennials to buy. But that was one of the first things that I thought was interesting, was that, you know, millennials do own their homes. And then, of course, right now, millennials are slowing down their moving process. This is the lowest rate of millennials moving in quite some time. And part of that has to do with it is expensive to move, just the process of moving. I'm not even talking about like cost of living, wherever you're going, just the process of moving is expensive. And so I found it interesting that 60% of millennials who wanted to move said they had to stay put because they couldn't afford to move. And I thought that was one of the most interesting things about this survey.
Maybe I should have said the survey showed that only half as many millennials are moving as were a decade ago. What are the patterns in terms of metro dispersion for what's going on with millennial migration patterns?
Yeah, well, I think part of that is, so when we talk about moving in our study, we talk about net millennial moves. And so that what that means is millennials moving in as a ratio to millennials moving out. So when we talk about something like a state like Montana having a high number, like having the highest number of net millennial moves in, we're talking they have more millennials moving in than millennials moving out. So 95% more millennials moving in than millennials moving out. And Montana is the number one state for millennials to move to right now, followed by Connecticut, and then Maine, then Oklahoma, then New Hampshire, then South Carolina. And so you're looking at these top states, and with the exception of Connecticut, which is generally considered a little bit more expensive, Most of these states are kind of considered less expensive. They are states that are somewhat known for, somewhat known for outdoor activities, somewhat known for having kind of a slower paced lifestyle. Even Connecticut is somewhat known for having a slower paced lifestyle. And I think one of the draws of Connecticut is you get that slower paced suburban kind of lifestyle. But you still have proximity to big city, right? Like if you're moving to Connecticut, your big city is New York City. And so I think that there's lifestyle choices here. And millennials are looking at, what do I want my life to look like? What values do I have in terms of, like, do I want access to the outdoors? Do I want access to city amenities? Do I want access to a lower cost of living? And millennials are looking at that and saying, how do I, you know, kind of move someplace that helps my life. And, but yeah, I was blown away. I live in Idaho. And so to see Montana with like that next door, like my next door neighbor, Montana, like topping the list, I was like, good job, friend. But yeah, but I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, figuring out that lifestyle and figuring out the balance between cost of living and the lifestyle you want to live.
Hey, look, I love Montana, but it's conditional upon it being June, July, August or so.
And I'm right there with you.
I live in Idaho,
so I feel the winter pain.
Exactly. There was all this discussion about millennials are moving to these cities like Nashville and Austin. I saw a Wall Street Journal article the other day talking about how Austin's rents and home prices are declining faster than any other city. What happened to millennials wanting to move to these places that seemed so desirable, tech hubs and trendy, and you know, we could take it over with our $8 pour overs and avocado toast.
Well, I do think to some degree, those things are still true, because it's interesting. The thing that I find really interesting about this, when we talk about net moves, is Montana is the top state with net millennial moves into the state, but none of its cities appear on the top list of cities. Right? Our top cities are Tampa, Las Vegas, Jacksonville, Nashville is still there, Austin is still there, Bridgeport, Connecticut is on the list, Phoenix, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and Richmond, Virginia. So these are kind of what we would consider, I mean, not Las Vegas or Phoenix maybe, but a lot of these others are considered very mid, well, Austin's, I guess, biggish, but a lot of these are kind of mid-sized cities, right? What we would consider kind of mid-sized to larger cities, but they don't have that same like big city energy that we would see like with a Los Angeles or a New York City. And so I think that's really kind of interesting to me. That, you know, millennials are still moving to Nashville and Austin. They still have net millennial moves in. So I think that is something to look at. What I found interesting was that, you know, Montana is a state that has the highest number of net millennials moving in, but none of Montana's metro areas like Bozeman, Billings, Missoula is the top city for millennials. And so that was also kind of interesting for me.
There are a lot of mixed factors out there. There's strong job growth in the U.S. economy, but as well reported, home affordability is at an all-time low. If you were to speculate on how this trend progresses, do you expect millennials to continue to slow their moving patterns, or we could or should see a surge again in the future, depending on what happens with the economy?
Yeah, I think in the immediate future, we're probably going to see millennial moving patterns stay about where they're at right now. Like I said, half of millennials own their homes. They say they can't afford to move, the ones that want to move. And many millennials are just settling down. And so I think a lot of them are saying like, well, let's wait and see. Let's see if the housing market improves for buyers. Let's see if, because home prices have not come down in the last couple of years, like many people thought they might. They haven't quite come down. Mortgage rates are still high. And so I think that we're probably going to see a wait and see approach in the short to medium term until we see what happens, how things shake out, and how people start feeling. Like you said, all the indicators of the economy are that things are great, but the feelings that people have, and especially millennials, the feelings that millennials have about the economy are different, right? We look at all the indicators that we like to use, the popular indicators of the economy, and we're like, well, it's doing gangbusters. Why aren't we happy? And But millennials are looking at the reality on the ground of their day-to-day personal finances and their personal economy. And they're going, it doesn't feel as good. And so I think we're going to have a big wait and see approach as before we see millennials pick up the pace again.
I don't want to limit this to just millennials because, in fact, the overall amount of moves have declined as a percentage across all age categories. The Gen Z, though, has gone up by 60% or so. What's causing the fire under the butts of all these Gen Zers to move about?
So once again, we have like we're forgetting that Gen Alpha is already born. The people following Gen Z, my son is Gen Z and is 21, and he's not even amongst the oldest cohorts of Gen Z. We forget that these guys are graduating college and getting their first, for lack of a better word, real job, right? And so they're moving. They're moving. They're starting their lives. They're trying to decide whether it's time to leave the nest and establish like their own household, even if they're moving in with friends or other people. So I think for Gen Z, the reason we're seeing the tick up for Gen Z is they're at that stage of life where they are starting to graduate from college or even getting their graduate degrees and they're getting their new job and they're moving.
I'd like to get your opinion on the nature of these younger generations, considering technology is so ubiquitous and I can get on my phone and connect with somebody halfway across the globe instantly. New York and California are becoming net negative moving states. And these were traditionally places that people wanted to live, but they're obviously incredibly expensive. Do you see these trends continuing in these high dollar states, or do you view it as temporary?
Yeah, so I think one of the big things is that they are becoming net negative states, but they are kind of also sticky, if that makes sense. So like California is a good example. So we have, it's a net negative state for moves out. But then when you dig in there, you realize, people who grew up in California are either moving back in or never left. They're not interested in moving out of California. A lot of the people moving out of California were people that aren't necessarily born there or grew up there. They moved there and now they're moving out. So that's one of the just kind of interesting whatevers. But the top reason for Gen Z to establish their own household, but I think one of the big reasons that states like West Virginia, Utah, South Carolina continue to see a lot of net move-ins for Gen Z and then other generations is, once again, like you said, with technology, you have the ability to work from anywhere if you particularly have a white-collar job. If you have a job that allows you to work remotely, you can move to where it helps. You can live where you want to have your lifestyle. So if you're not interested in New York City as your lifestyle, you can work someplace and still have a New York City job, if that makes sense. So I think that helps a lot too. And I think it's got to be like a big part of it is cost of living. You brought in Gen Z. The top net move-in city for Gen Z is Austin, Texas. And so you still kind of get a city feel with Austin, but with a much lower cost of living than you would get with like a New York City.
I'm going to humble brag for a second here and say, fortunately, I've lived in Austin. I've lived in New York City. I think it is worth spending time in these bigger cities before people go to places like Montana. It's good for socialization. It's good for your network and those sorts of things. Miranda, I really appreciate the time today. I thought this was very interesting and I want to thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on.
After a quiet opening 3 days to the trading week, Thursday brought a couple of headlines that put some uncertainty into markets. There were geopolitical headlines pointing to ramping tensions in the Middle East, with Iran warning Israel that retaliation was coming soon. And there were Fed headlines from Minneapolis Fed President Kashkari, delivering hawkish remarks, by saying that interest rate cuts may not be needed this year if progress on fighting inflation stalls, especially if the economy remains robust. Both headlines triggered a flight to safety, rising bond prices and lowering yields. Traders increasingly see the Fed lagging behind other central banks when it comes to rate cuts. The latest weekly jobless claims report, up 221,000 for the week, showed a larger than expected number of claims. Today brings the all-important March payrolls report. Headline payrolls came in 303,000 versus 170,000 expectations and 223,000 previously. The unemployment rate came in at 3.8% when it was seen ticking down 0.1% to 3.8%. Average hourly earnings were up 0.3% as expected and up 4.1% year over year. Later today brings February consumer credit and more scheduled Fed speakers. After the employment news, agency MBS prices are worse an eighth to a quarter than Thursday's close, and the 10-year is yielding 4.39 after closing yesterday at 4.31%. The 2-year is up to 4.71. Let's wrap up with a joke and some housekeeping. I struggled with winter until I bought a snowblower. It has made life 1,000 times easier. I load it in the back of my truck and drive south until someone says, "What the hell is that?" And that's where I spend the winter. Thanks again to today's podcast sponsor, LoanVision. With LoanVision, the mortgage banking industry's premier mortgage accounting solution, you can take your accounting department from cost center to revenue generator, operating more efficiently and profitably. Visit loanvision.com to learn more. If you have any questions about the podcast or sponsoring opportunities, send me an email at robbie@robchrisman.com. Visit robchrisman.com for more information on our industry partners, access to archived commentaries, and how to subscribe to the daily mortgage news and commentary. To listen to or download past episodes of this podcast, search Mortgage News on any platform you get your podcast from.